If you want to cry libel, you'd be better heard in England. There, when the media want to name names, they have to confront a strangulating set of legal conditions. So rather than risk being sued, many choose to self-censor. But this week, that iron grip loosened a bit. The pivotal case, Jameel versus Wall Street Journal Europe. It involved an article about how Saudi Arabia, at the request of the U.S., was monitoring the transactions of those suspected of funding terrorism. One business named in the paper sued, and a lower British court, quite typically, ruled in its favor, arguing that the journal hadn't met the Reynolds test, a strict 10-point checklist that's nearly impossible to meet, especially on deadline. But on Wednesday, Britain's highest court decided that judges must also consider if a story was reported responsibly and if it served the public interest. And it reversed the lower court's decision. Neri Shan, a British media lawyer, says it was a giant leap forward for press freedom.
And the way the courts interpreted that defense before was to apply a very rigorous 10-point test, which media defendants had to comply with. And it was virtually impossible. What the court is saying is that the judges should realize that you can still be responsible in publishing a story and not comply with all the things that before the court was saying you had to comply with.
You know, all these years, people who have wanted to sue for libel made an effort to find some grounds in Britain because it was so much more favorable to the plaintiff than in the United States. Now that virtually every publication is in effect global because of the internet, there was a cottage industry in these cases in Britain.
There still is. I mean, this defense is limited to serious journalism on matters of public interest. It doesn't apply to celebrity-type stories, for example. What would change is if the Wall Street Journal, the New York Times, were to publish, for example, a story on someone who's alleged to be a terrorist suspect after a rigorous investigation, those articles are far more defendable in the UK than they were before.
I was particularly interested in the remark by Lord Scott of Foscote, who was one of the judges on the panel, and he defended the right of news organizations to publish material deemed private by the government by saying, "It is no part of the duty of the press to cooperate with any government, let alone foreign governments, whether friendly or not, in order to keep from the public information of public interest, the disclosure of which cannot be said to be damaging to national interests."
Yes, one of the criticisms that a lot of people had over the initial judgment by the lower court was that what the judge had said is that because the government had made the decision not to publish names, the newspapers should follow that lead. But I think there's a realization by the House of Lords and more generally that sometimes governments want to keep information from the public for their own self-interest. And it shouldn't be the government that should judge what information should come out to the public and what information should be kept from the public.
It's a very important point, Neri. It also seems like an obvious point that would have come up in dozens of cases over the course of hundreds of years. Why is it being confronted now?
Well, unfortunately, because litigation in the UK is so expensive, it would have taken the Wall Street Journal, the cost of this case going to the House of Lords, what I would have thought be approaching $2 million. So unfortunately, in the UK, we don't have that many cases that go through our courts of this nature.
Do you think people may have a little more courage to bring them to the highest court, even though the cases themselves are just as expensive as they ever were?
I think it will encourage people to publish stories that they wouldn't otherwise have published. And I think it would also encourage publishers to take the risk of taking cases to higher courts, even if they lose at first instance. Hopefully, it will also discourage defendants who bring cases in this country, even though the substantive publication has been in the US.
In other words, precisely the case at hand, Jameel versus Wall Street Journal Europe.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, but the claimant knew that it would have had no chance to succeed in an action in the US because of the liberal laws of freedom of expression you have. So hopefully this case will send a signal to those sort of claimants not to come to our courts in the UK. But it won't discourage US celebrities, for example, coming to our courts and suing over articles about their private life or matters of tittle-tattle, as we say in the UK.
I'm not thinking of those stories, though. I'm thinking in the U.S., stories about the archipelago of secret prisons and the tracking of the money of terrorists and Abu Ghraib and all the stories that have originated here that have attracted such harsh criticism. Do you see the two different national media going in two different directions, yours and ours?
I think the way the public are in the U.K. is that they're very critical of U.S. government policy and U.K. government policy when it comes to the issues you've described. So the newspapers won't get condemned as being anti-patriotic by publishing those sort of stories. Really, the judgment call that the newspapers have to make in this country is not whether it's treason or anti-patriotic, it's whether they're going to be successfully sued or not. That's the bottom line that they think about.
Neary, thank you very much.
Thanks very much.
Neary Shan is a UK media lawyer for the firm Taylor Wessing, where he has represented both British and American newspapers.
You come to the New Yorker Radio Hour for conversations that go deeper with people you really want to hear from, whether it's Bruce Springsteen or Questlove or Olivia Rodrigo, Liz Cheney, or the godfather of artificial intelligence, Geoffrey Hinton, or some of my extraordinarily well-informed colleagues at The New Yorker. So join us every week on the New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.